meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, or welcome to the Winds of Change on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. I'm welcome back after a week off, a little bit of traveling during June.
And Holy, here we go again.
So I got to wrinkle your brain. I'm doing this on the day after 4th of July. And so we got to have some American history. We got to appreciate the role that us Catholics.
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, instead of 1776, we're going to go a little farther into the 19th century, toward the end of the 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s, because there's a little known, I think, great Catholic hero. There's a story about a bishop who actually was a priest from Chicago by the name of Francis Clement Kelly. His story is most interesting. It pulls together a whole lot of different levels, points, aspects of being Catholic, of being patriotic, of the relationship between church and state, which, of course, as your regular listener, you know, is one of my favorite themes. It's the theme of the century, as it were, especially for us Catholics. So I got to introduce you to Bishop Kelly, Bishop Francis Clement Kelly, and the very intriguing events of his life that help us in our own day and age to see how significant and important it is for hierarchy and laity to be working together and trying to influence the society we live in, and even to influence Rome, to influence the Pope, who in so many ways is not infallible. Of course, in some ways he is infallible. And the story of Bishop Clement's trying to work with Rome and the popes during those days is not a story of trying to topple the church, which is what Protestant Christians like Martin Luther and those gangs, they had to dismantle the hierarchy of the church. At least they thought they did. So Bishop Clement Kelly is not trying to dismantle the hierarchy of the church. He's trying to influence it. And I think that's a key aspect for us today. We don't want to dismantle anything that is of the basic nature of our precious Catholic faith, but that doesn't mean we're not called upon to try to influence in one way or another, especially when we see something that is, well, let's say, in the wrong direction or misguided, shall we say. Anyways, you know, I wanted to give you a little confession here.
You just wrinkle my brain.
Tease you for the future, in future episodes of The Winds of Change. During my time away, I was able to do some wonderful reading, which is a good thing. And I wanted to do a show on cosmology today. There's a very, very interesting book by a guy named Stephen Meyer, who's a Catholic physicist, scientist, cosmologist, astrophysicist, whatever, all that good stuff, highfalutin scientist. But the fact that he's a believing person, Christian, Catholic, means he can dialogue with the atheistic scientists. And so, anyways, I was going to do a show on that, but I'm going to put that off because I'm really swimming with the sharks. I'm really, when I'm trying to do science and cosmology and physics and nuclear biology, astrophysics, all that stuff, I'm way out of my wheelhouse, but I'm finding it so very, very interesting. Do you ever, especially as we get older, do you ever sort of say, wish I would have paid more attention back in school to my chemistry class, my science classes? Or you could say that about your math classes, or you could say that about your history classes, or you could say that about your religion classes, anything, right? Anyways, that's the feeling. I want to get a little better grasp of the very complicated matters that are involved in cosmology. Also, the questions of the origins of life. How did life begin? And it all has to do with that theme of intelligent design. Is there an intelligent being behind the universe that has to explain the universe? Or are the atheistic scientists right in saying no intelligent being is necessary to explain anything in the universe? It could all be explained by chance, random selection, and all the rest. So anyways, be prepared for one of those Winds of Change talks on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. So back to, since it is close to the 4th of July celebration, and I shared a little bit of this with my parishioners on 4th of July.
Holy, here we go again, Batman.
It's a fascinating story. And as I say, to appreciate what's going on here and apply it to our times, we have to see that trying to influence the Pope when we think he's going a little wrong is not at all unfaithful. It's a very noble and important thing. And also, it highlights a kind of uniqueness in the United States of America that now we could see is a light to the nations, to the world. I think that light is flickering these days if we lose the essence of the uniqueness that is of a good quality. We will collapse into nothingness or mediocrity. And the idea that other nations are watching the United States collapse and laughing or being even happy about it is a very sad thing from my perspective, and I assume for most of you. I'll share this little insight. I would, as a person born in America, someone who served for a little while in the Air Force, I have a great love for this country. And I sometimes find myself thinking that some priests and or bishops and or cardinals they especially those who are not born here, they don't have that same fighting spirit, shall we say, as we see a moral collapse of the church and of our country. There's a kind of laissez-faire attitude in some people. Well, if it's going down, let it go down. let it die. After all, the church is bigger than the church in the United States. In this sense, I hearken to the power that I see in a number of Protestant denominations. Protestant denominations here in the United States really do, in a strong way, I think that this is their country, and they're going to fight for what is theirs more than someone who doesn't really think this country belongs to them. And for many years of our nation's history, Catholics had to take kind of like a secondary, subservient citizen role. But I think we've earned a seat at the table, as it were, and to recognize the decline of our nation is a call to us to do what we can to right the ship, as it were, to turn it in a different direction. So it is. And then let's start that little phrase, a seat at the table, leads me to the beginning of the story of Father Clement Kelly. He did become a bishop a little bit later in life, and he was out there in Oklahoma, the wild, wild west, as it were. He when he was out there, he kind of yearned for the big city, the East, Chicago, New York, etc. But he did his best to bring the church to the wild, wild west, and it's because of his efforts that there is good presence of Christianity, especially Catholicism, out in the West. That's, he joins, I'd put him in the ranks of someone like a Father de Smet. Did you ever hear of Father de Smet? He is a missionary. They called him the missionary to the Rockies, and he evangelized, baptized, and catechized thousands of Native American Indians. They were, for the most part, in his estimation, very open to Christianity. Didn't he was, of course, in different dangers and many different points in his life, but he was quick to praise the Indians for a kind of openness to Christianity that we don't really have a sense of. Anyways, okay. So Bishop Clement Kelly, at the end of his life, is out there, but now we're going to, the point I want to highlight is his earlier life, which leads to the idea that there is a Catholic responsibility to help not only the United States as a wonderful country, but also help Catholicism as the international, worldwide body, religion that it is. Okay? So my story is going to start at the end of World War I. Most of us probably know that the Treaty of Versailles, which happened in Paris in 1919, was the way that we were going to try to settle the war, World War I, the war to end all war. It happened on a train. This is an interesting little sidebar. They had the Treaty of Versailles. There was a train that they met in, and when Hitler marched into Paris during World War II, he made sure to get that same train and have the mayor or some important dignitary, one of the generals of the French army, sign over their obedience to Hitler and the German regime on that same train. Anyways, it's the way history goes, right? So here we are, and you have to remember the reason or the place that our American Catholic hero comes in has to do with the Italian problem going on at the time and the Mexican problem going on at the time and the frontier mission territory at the time. No! Keep those ideas in mind. First, the Italian problems at the time, a little before World War I, but you may or may not know that Italy didn't become a nation until, I think it was 1871, right around there, 1870. Well, wait a minute. No, I'm looking here on my notes. 1861. It was in 1861 that Italy declares itself a nation, and it proclaims as its capital the city of Rome. We are now a nation unto ourselves, all these provinces, and especially those old provinces that used to be under the control of the Pope, known as the Papal States, they are no more. And we declare all of Italy from the bottom of the boot of the peninsula all the way to the top. And actually where the top ends and begins is part of our story, because after World War I, when the German forces were defeated, they had to figure out, okay, where will we make that border line? That's part of the problem. So, but another part of the problem, too, was Italy declaring Rome as the capital of Italy. So, as a matter of fact, the Italian army wanted to go to the Vatican, and I assumed, like, to arrest the Pope, like many kings and generals in the past have done.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Former President Trump getting arrested by his opposition, as it were. The more things change, the more they stay the same, right? So anyways, they were going to, the Italian army was going to go in and kidnap or arrest the Pope. The French army was sent, the French army being more loyal to the Pope. The French were saying, wait a minute, we are the eldest daughter of the church. We're going to stand up for the Pope. So they go in and they guard the Vatican, keeping the Italian troops away from the Pope. They do that for, let's see, 9 years. And that's when they give up in 1870. The French troops go home. Okay, putting in our context, it's always good to remember what else was going on in the world, right? Whenever you do history, and I think this is a unique part that captures my attention. I don't know if it does yours, but, and especially as an American, I want to know what was going on over here. Well, of course, we just finished our Civil War. We were trying to fight not only to free the slaves, but we meaning the North and those following Abraham Lincoln, were trying to prove to the world that a republic could survive. In Europe, the idea of a republic was a little bit laughed at, because if you're gonna give all this power to a people and vote on so many things, there's going to be divides and there's going to be problems and. So therefore, there's going to be conflicts, and you better have a king. Forget the ballots, all the rest. Anyways, so Italy does storm the Vatican, but they're unsuccessful in kidnapping the Pope, as it were. They're not exactly sure what, but they stop and they don't kidnap him or arrest him. They're going to wait outside. It's kind of like siege, put a siege on the Pope in his papal lands. So Italy thought, since they have a history of so much Catholicism, even though they're now socialists, they figured they'd have a good plan. They were going to give Rome, the Pope, meaning Catholicism, the rights of extraterritoriality. Came up with, they'd be tax exempt too. It wouldn't be charged tax, and we would give you the rights of extraterritoriality, which means you can go in and out of the Vatican at will. We won't require anything else. So the Pope and probably a lot of Catholics are saying, take. Well, the Pope didn't want to take the deal, but others were probably saying, take the deal. Why not? Why do we need? And the Pope didn't take the deal because the Pope realized that even with this right of extraterritoriality and the tax-exempt status, they're still subjects of the Italian government. And that's not good enough. It kind of reminds you of the Pope's skepticism of taking the Italian government's offer. It's kind of like when we hear about an executive order, right? In these day and ages, we hear about so many executive orders. And one of the weak things about an executive order, whether it's border security, gun rights, educational moves one way or another, one executive could turn that order around the next time there's another executive, right? So anyways, the Pope there says, no, we're not going to take that. It's not good enough. We need absolute sovereignty. We are not part of the new nation called Italy. You can call Rome your capital, but you can't call the Vatican part of Italy. It was at this time, let's see, in 1915, that Spain offers what is called the Escorial to the Pope. What that basically means, I think Pope the King of Spain, was saying, well, you can come here. If you want to set up a new Vatican over here in Spain, you'll be we'll welcome you. We'll give you that sovereignty. I always thought it might have been a good idea for, even now, sometimes I think Pope should move to the United States and we should set up a new Vatican in the, I wouldn't want it in New York. I thought maybe Chicago would be a good place, but I don't even think New York would be a good place. We needed, where would it be? Maybe St. Louis, maybe Denver, somewhere in the center, eh? Anyways, we don't have to worry about that right now because it's not going to happen, but that was a plan that was offered and obviously rejected. So, oh boy, I think I'm past the first break time, right, Nick? Just introducing the story, but it gets more complicated, it gets more interesting. But again, as you listen to the story, keep in mind the role of Catholics in America, the responsibility of helping leaders go the right way, because they might not go the right way, and see where the weaknesses are today, and in order to avoid or turn around the, shall we say, state of decline that the church and our nation are in, we need to focus like a laser beam on certain issues and not just sort of give in to the political voices that are often in great contradiction to Catholicism. That's why Catholic politicians who are so, shall we say, pro-choice and so much behind the anti-Christian marriage movement, whether it be gay marriage, now transgenderism, abortion rights, et cetera, that et cetera does get complicated, but we have to keep it on the radar screen. Anyways, okay, let's take our next break. I am Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio, 88.5 FM, and we are AM 750 WNDC.
I'm Dr. Peter Howard, founder of the Fulton Sheen Movement. On July 9th, join me and Father Tom Loya at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen for an historic rally to fan the flame of love and devotion to Venerable Fulton Sheen. We need Fulton Sheen's intercession and guidance now more than ever. We're gathering to pray for his cause and especially for the Holy Spirit to move the church to set a new date for his beatification. Starting at 10 a.m., come and pray with us. Enjoy a delicious cookout and hear inspiring talks on Sheen by Father Loya and myself. Activities are planned for the whole family. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com for a complete schedule and to sign our global petition to unpause the cause of this great prophet for our times. Co-sponsored by WFSI, this rally is your chance to make a difference. I'll see you all on July 9th.
Bye now, and God love you.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air. What with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button, or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here, brain wrinkling you with some history on this week of 4th of July, whenever you're listening to the podcast. Remember, Podbean is our major app website that has our podcasts on. Look for Winds of Change Chicago. When you don't put that Chicago in, there's a bunch of other things that are called Winds of Change. But Winds of Change Chicago gets you to our podcast. All the wonderful people that share with you here on WNDC or WSFI. Okay, so trying to highlight a kind of a hidden hero in the Catholic world here in the United States, a bishop by the name of Clement Kelly. He was a Chicago priest, and he started to get involved in. He's the founder of the Catholic Church Extension Society, which some of us know fairly well. It's there's a collection for it. You probably get calendars from the Extension Society. It's kind of like a mission society for missions in the United States, and that's part of the key thing of the story. There's another organization called the Society for the Propagation of the Faith that takes up mission collections for worldwide missions. Actually, Bishop Fulton Sheehan was head of the Society of the Propagation of the Faith. And even though he knew that a lot of that money had to go to foreign countries, like especially Africa and China, and many others, but primarily Africa and China, Fulton Sheehan knew very well that a great part of the missionary work of the church by American Catholics had to be in America. That's where the conflict started to come in, because where did the money go? The Society for the Propagation of the Faith was controlled primarily by French bishops in Paris, and so they weren't too keen on Clement Kelly's effort to try to start a new society for home missions. Okay, so but back to the issue of Italy trying to become its own, well, they didn't try to become their own nation, they did become their own nation, but they're trying to make subservient the Vatican. So actually there were three popes, I know at least two, Pius the Ninth, Leo the 13th, and Pius the 10th, were all what they call prisoners of the Vatican. During that time of negotiation, the popes were afraid to go outside the Vatican, because stepping outside the Vatican, they knew they were stepping onto to Italy, and they wouldn't have much of a leg to stand on to say that you can't arrest us. But the socialist leaders of Italy wanted to arrest the Pope because they wanted to force the Pope. They wanted to take control of Catholicism by taking control of the Vatican. It's very similar to what happened in England with the Church of England. It's very similar. Well, France is a little bit different. The opposition forces of Catholicism were the ones called the Jacobites, and they were definitely opposed to almost everything Catholic, but they didn't want to not call themselves Catholic. They wanted to hold on. They weren't going to deny the fact that they're Catholic, even though they were denying most, if not all, the teachings. I'm sure they held on to a couple of them. That's again reminiscent of what we see going on in the United States today. There's certainly a lot of Catholics who don't want to not call themselves Catholic, but they certainly disagree with a lot of Catholic beliefs, teachings, and practices. But there's something in their DNA, something in their gut, something in their feelings that says, I'm not going to not be a Catholic. Anyways, that's why you'll sometimes hear more conservative voices talk about Jacobites here in the United States, people that are, excuse my French, hell-bent on bringing the church down, even though they're part of the church, shall we say. So Pius X, those three popes I mentioned, he was beginning to weaken, and he was willing to accept Italy's offer. Pius X, who we primarily remember as the Pope of Frequent Communion, right, said, oh, even children could take communion as soon as they reach the age of reasoning. So second graders started receiving Holy Communion in that era, as it were. It wasn't always that, you know, some children obviously received communion early too, but it wasn't as Pope Pius X was famous for that. But here he's weakening because he's willing to say, okay, we're in the modern world, so maybe fighting for complete sovereignty of the Vatican isn't worth it. Maybe we could take Italy's...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's brain wrinkling. Maybe we could take Italy's offer. They're going to give us tax-free status. They're going to allow us in and out. We won't need passports, etc. Maybe they didn't realize that they would have to give up their own stamp. unless the government of Italy agreed to let them do it. Anyways, all those things that a country can do, Pope Pius X was willing to maybe change, recognizing that he's in a new era, the modern era. But, okay, but he had a little caveat. He was willing to tell the president of Italy, I will agree with you if we can arrange some form of international treaty that the Pope in Rome, in the Vatican, would be automatically recognized as some kind of new entity, but it would include many of the countries of the world that would enter into some kind of treaty. In other words, with France, Germany, Belgium, United States, everywhere, they would agree that they will kind of like be a watchdog over Italy's control of the church, then maybe we can... will accept that offer. Well, Italy didn't want to take that offer because Italy wanted to keep this an internal issue between church and state. Again, very similar to what happened in England. If, let us say, the Catholics in England under Henry VIII were willing to say, okay, you can be the head of the Church of England, as long as all the other nations of the world could kind of be a watchdog over your control of the church in England. Of course, Henry VIII wouldn't go along with that, and neither did the Italians want to go along with that. See how key and important this theme of the relationship between church and state is? We always want... If we're seeking power and we're seeking to control things, even for a good reason, I want to make the world better, you find popular things and you want to control those popular things. If the Catholic Church didn't have a kind of popularity, if it didn't have enough muscle, as it were, people wouldn't really want to take it under their wing and be controlling of it, as it were. But as the church stays strong in its own right, then politicians who are always trying to build up their constituents and voting power, they're going to want to control the church, as it were. Okay, so here's where our hero, Bishop Clement Kelly, comes in. As they're battling about these issues, World War I comes around, and World War I ends. And so at the Treaty of Versailles, where they're trying to negotiate, Bishop Clement Kelly is very much in touch with the cardinals and bishops from Mexico. This was the time that bishops and cardinals from Mexico were abandoning ship. As socialism grew in Mexico and priests and catechists and people were being lynched, etc. It's the time of that movie, Cristeros, if you've seen that movie. If you haven't, you got to watch that. It's a pretty accurate story of the real attempt to stomp out the Catholic Church in Mexico. So anyways, perhaps the bishops from Mexico who ran away from Mexico and took harbor in the United States, many places, New York, Chicago, Denver, other places, the South, Arizona, over that border. Anyways, they were asking Clement Kelly to go to Rome in their stead, as Rome was trying to get a seat at the table at Versailles and try to influence the way the nations were going to settle the problems that happened at the end of World War I.
Wow.
And
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkling. And because we all know that World War II came very soon after World War I, we could sort of assume now that the way that the situations were, the way that the Treaty of Versailles was concluded, is that it didn't do a very good job. As a matter of fact, it got Germans so mad that they started World War II. That's why Hitler wanted to have his papers signed in Paris on that same train that Versailles used. Versailles is the beautiful palace of the king, but there was this train that they met on in different occasions. Anyways, so Treaty of Versailles going on, how are we going to split up the nations? Where are we going to draw borders? Who's going to be listened to the most? Who's going to, what ideologies are going to be rewarded? Which ones are going to be punished? Actually, another aspect of that Treaty of Versailles that had bad consequences was the way Japan was treated. Japan was part of World War I. Big enough, you know, they weren't maybe a major player, but the Japanese wanted a seat at the table at the Treaty of Versailles, too. Wilson wasn't up for that. Many others were. That got the Japanese mad enough to join the Germans when World War II came around. You know that. So, okay, I'm going slow here, and this is a long, complicated story, but I think we got to take our another break, right, Nick? I'll get there eventually, but it's also interesting. You know, history is just one thing leads to another, and we'll get through this one way or another, and we'll come back to our wonderful hero. The important thing is to appreciate that this American bishop really helped the Catholic Church in the United States and helped the Catholic Church throughout the world. I'm Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM, and we are WNDZ AM 750.
Winds of Change would like you to know that July is the month we honor the precious blood of Jesus, falling right between June's devotion to the Sacred Heart and August's devotion to the Immaculate Heart. July is an ideal time to connect our devotion to Jesus and Mary, as well as to heighten our connection to the blood of the Lamb of God.
We are the students of St. Stan's Ososka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
I'm Dr. Peter Howard, founder of the Fulton Sheen Movement. On July 9th, join me and Father Tom Loya at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen for an historic rally to fan the flame of love and devotion to Venerable Fulton Sheen. We need Fulton Sheen's intercession and guidance now more than ever. We're gathering to pray for his cause and especially for the Holy Spirit to move the church to set a new date for his beatification. Starting at 10 a.m., come and pray with us. Enjoy a delicious cookout and hear inspiring talks on Sheen by Father Loya and myself. Activities are planned for the whole family. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com for a complete schedule and to sign our global petition to unpause the cause of this great prophet for our times. Co-sponsored by WFSI, this rally is your chance to make a difference. I'll see you all on July 9th.
Bye now, and God love you.
Hey, welcome back. Hope you can get out to Father Loya's rally for Fulton Sheen this Sunday. Great, great cause, I must say. Some of you listeners, if you've been listening to our WNDZ programming for years, might remember Father Loya from years ago when he was pretty much regular on here. Okay, back to how a little priest from Chicago helped save the world with the help of a lot of lady on that recognized he was he wasn't being selfish, he wasn't being narrowly nationalistic. See, that's another aspect. The United States was different as a nation than the nations of Europe because it was so international in its makeup. People in Europe, France, Poland, Italy, Ireland, et cetera, they would see a nation that wanted to form a new missionary society in parallel or in competition to the Society of the Propagation of the Faith would say, well, that's not really right. When we take up money for the church in France, we take care of the needs of France. When we take care of a mission, when we take up a mission collection, that's to go outside of France, or Poland, or Italy, Spain, etc. But in the United States, Clement Kelly was saying, it's not really the same over here. And we, as a nation, are not identified by who your father was, in other words, by your blood, but because we are part of this new experiment called the United States of America. So we got the Pope trying to figure out how he could keep his sovereignty over Italy, as Italy is trying to control Catholicism through the control of the Vatican. And we got this treaty at the end of World War I, trying to figure out how are we going to organize society at the end of World War I. Pope Benedict, the Pope at the time, is now Benedict XV, the Benedict before our almost present Benedict XVI of happy memory, God rest his soul, saintly Pope that he was. Okay, so Pope Benedict XV calls up a cardinal in the United States because the Pope knew that the United States was very much a part of the victory of World War I. They're a big player in World War I. So the Pope calls up Cardinal Gibbons And he says, you got to ask your president, who was President Wilson at the time, of course, to ask the planners of the Treaty of Versailles to demand that the Vatican have a seat at the treaty table. Obviously, the heads of state would be the ones who have a seat at the table. And if the planners of the Treaty of Versailles, which was an international group of leaders, of nations, of course, if they gave the Vatican a seat, that would be recognizing that they are a nation. So the Vatican is its own country, not like, not just a subject of Italy. Anyways, President Wilson, who was really no friend of Catholicism, as a matter of fact, he says, no way, that's not going to work. And so the Pope doesn't just give up. He keeps trying. He asks, he sends a general letter to all the cardinals of the United States and to Canada and to Brazil, Brazil being a very Catholic country, of course, and was a participant in World War I, to tell the planners of the Versailles to make some cardinal have a seat at the Treaty of Versailles. It was a Cardinal Mercier from Belgium. Well, that doesn't work either. So here comes Bishop Clement Kelly. Mexico, of course, is a nation, even though they didn't do much in World War I, but they were going to be able to have a seat at the table. And I guess a head of state could certainly bring along his chaplain, cardinal, bishop, one way or another. But here the bishops of Mexico were kind of in hiding. They were saving their neck from the socialists. New leaders of Mexico. And that's where Clement Kelly comes in. He's gonna get a seat at the table, not as perhaps a voting member, but maybe as a voice of sorts, you know, because he's going to represent those Mexican bishops. Why did he have such a good connection with the Mexican bishops? Because he was developing the Catholic Church Extension Society, which was collecting money and helping priests, missionaries out in the West. And of course, the Southwest is right near Mexico. And so one of the things that became very popular, a great fundraiser, was little chapel train cars. They would take a boxcar or a caboose, turn it into a chapel, and they would zip around the West and say, hey, we're going to have Mass, we're going to have confirmations, first communions, weddings, etc. And they did a lot of evangelizing that way. So that was the Catholic Church Extension Society. So now we got the situation gets a little more complicated because the new president of Italy, a guy by the name of Vittorio Orlando, that sounds Mexican, doesn't it? But maybe I was trying to sound Italian. If you've been to Rome, there's a big, huge monument to Vittorio Orlando, and to the new nation that was born. He's a bit like a George Washington to the Italians, except he was a little too anti-Catholic, I'm afraid, even though he was Catholic. So what President Orlando was trying to accomplish was not only control of the church, but to make the northern borders of Italy much farther than what we know it now. They wanted it to go as far north as a little town called Fiume, which is present-day Rijeka, Croatia. So that goes up and over the bay, as it were, of the sea. If you know Croatia, it's sort of across the sea there. If you go south from there, you get to the Greek islands, of course. Anyways, that would have greatly expanded Italy to be bigger than we know it today. And just about everyone on the table didn't want to grant Italy that. So, but he was insistent, and the battle continues. Okay, here's where Clement Kelly comes in. He's a representative of the Mexican bishops in Versailles in France, and he sees that there may be a way to get Italy to concede to the sovereign status of the Catholic Church in Italy, by means of the Vatican's own sovereignty. And Orlando saying, no, we don't want you to be your own nation. You are part of our nation. Again, because they know that the Catholic Church is powerful in the history of the world. And if you're the new president of Italy and you want Italy to be powerful, you want to have some control over the Catholic Church. Anyways, there were enough Italians in the United States, and Clement Kelly, Father Clement at this time, I don't think he was a bishop yet, he sees a way to influence what's going on in Italy by writing and trying to organize and talk to a lot of Italians here in the United States. And he says, you got to tell your relatives back in Italy that you got to stand up for your Catholic faith. You got to stand up for your Catholic faith in this regard. You got to say that as much as you love the nation of Italy, Catholicism doesn't belong to Italians. It is international. And of course, the Italians in the United States would have that sense. They wanted to be Catholic, but they're not in Italy. So, and they're seeing some of the trouble of being Catholic in the United States too, but that we are a nation of nations, a nation of nationalities, as it were. It was much easier for the Italians in the United States to appreciate that distinction. And so they were able to convince, or they did enough to talk to their relatives in Italy to say, you know, the Pope needs to be an international star. The Catholicism, or the world, needs a voice often enough to stand against the great secular voices, the great political power brokers of the time. That's something that I just firmly believe in. That's something we have to appreciate today, that those who complain of the church being, you know, too political, for instance, that perspective does not appreciate the role of a corrector or of a formator, a dispute judge, an arbiter, a conciliatory role. You play the church needs some sense of its political power to be a voice in the political powers of the day, even though not precisely the same thing with an army or the right to tax. That's two basic things that separate church and state, right? We have collections, but we can't tax you. So anyways, Francis Clement Kelly is sent to Paris. Let's see, we're at March of 1919 already, as a liaison for the exiled Mexican cardinals. But here's where President Wilson just shows his anti-Catholic hand. He says, okay, Kelly, you're an American. You're going to be over there representing the Mexicans. But I, as your president, and you as a subject of the United States, I use that word subject with quotation marks, right? But that's kind of how President Wilson saw. He says, I will allow you, perhaps even in terms of granting him a visa to leave the country, I will allow you to go to Paris to say what you want to say, but you cannot say any words against President Carranza. President Carranza was a really anti-Catholic socialist.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's what. As a matter of fact, and he was the precursor, shall we say, to President Calles. President Calles is the one who's depicted in that movie, For Greater Glory, who says, "We will stomp these superstitious fools out of our society. They are corrupting our Mexican people as we are coming to a sense of freedom. We do not want Catholicism to corrupt our sense of freedom." Boy, and that rings true today too, doesn't it? The people who are screaming for freedom are screaming for a kind of license to do what they will, not a sense of freedom that's a part of a sense of truth about who we are. The transgender issue is front and center. Abortion rights. We're almost done here, but I got to put in another pitch for another show in the future. I've been reading the Obergefell Supreme Court decision about the change in law regarding the duty of every county clerk to recognize same-sex marriage, which I think is a greatly misnamed phrase. I call it same-gendered sex, which is a contradiction of terms. Okay, so Clement Kelly is told by the president, his president, President Wilson, you cannot talk against Carranza and Calles. Of course, Kelly wants to talk about it because he was hearing all the terrible things about Carranza from the Mexican bishops. So he's kind of sent there with a muzzle over his mouth. His strategy then turns into, okay, I'm going to go there and just make sure that the concept of religious freedom is respected in the Treaty of Versailles. Religious freedom, that's as far as he can get. And like I said, I think many times, that religious freedom is not an absolute freedom. You cannot create a religion to say or do anything you want, but certainly religious freedom is key in our basic understanding. So that does get included in the Treaty of Versailles to some extent, and Rome does, or Italy does grant the Vatican its sovereignty, and they back away. They backed away from that fight to control Catholicism, absolutely. So we can give Clement Kelly a great deal of kudos for sticking his neck out, and he had to battle against the spirit in Rome that was anti-American when he was trying to establish the Extension Society, because mission work means work outside the country. Doesn't mean work in your own country. And the Pope and many of the bishops were against that, but he gained a lot of points by helping the Pope get his sovereignty. Pretty interesting, no? Okay, well, God bless you for listening. I hope you enjoy this little episode into church history here in America, especially as we celebrate the importance of this country and the place that Catholicism has in our nation's history and future. I'm Father Tom Coyce. We'll see you next week. We are EWTN's Catholic Radio Voice, WSFI, 88.5 FM and AM 750 WNDZ.
Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred.